We're going to jump right into it because we're way behind already today. But this is it's a beautiful day to go out and decorate your house for Christmas. And I'm knowing more and more people who are actually paying other people to do it. Gary Fouts is on a phone line. He's a franchise owner with the Decor Group, I think based in New Lenox. And he's a guy who will put a star on your house for a price. Gary, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be here.
How'd I do? Did I get the name of the business right and all of that?
Yes, Christmas Decor is a national franchise. The actual corporate is located in Dallas, Texas.
And do you do, you must do other things, like you do have a landscaping? I always thought like landscapers did this stuff in the winter. Is that what you do during the summer?
Yeah, a lot of the landscapers. I have a lawn maintenance business since 1991. And back in 99, I got into the Christmas lighting because we had some winters that kind of like the last few that didn't have much snow. And our guys needed something to do.
And how was it going? I would imagine there was a rough patch during the economic downturn, but things must be on the upswing now.
2008, when it turned a little bit, it was kind of rough. But, you know, Christmas is such an emotional holiday that sometimes that didn't bother it.
What's it cost, Gary? If I wanted you to do my house, what am I going to lay out for you?
Average nationwide last year, Steve, was $1,500 to $1,800.
Wow. That seems like, God bless you. I hope it's a successful business, but that seems like a lot of money. Who are the people paying you to do this?
You know, it's funny because it varies with, you know, you'll go up to some houses and we'll go like, well, this person's never going to buy, but then Christmas is so emotional to them, they have to do it. So it's a wide range, but mostly it's, you know, the busy professionals that just don't have the time to do it.
Right. And see, it's funny, Gary, because I used to decorate my house for Christmas with great enthusiasm. My kids were young. Mm-hmm. You know, I went out. I loved it. And I just don't have that anymore. But I was out on Thanksgiving Day putting the decorations out. I told my wife, maybe my kids too, that, you know, I think next year it's going to be a wreath and a spotlight, and that's going to do it all. I guess I'm getting to the point that I would think that people, when they're unable to do it themselves, would sort of lessen. But maybe the people who are no longer able to do it for themselves as they get older go to guys like you.
Right. And a lot of people, you know, they don't want to get on the roof. So we have a lot of clients that we just do the roof line for because, you know, if a doctor falls off the roof, he pretty much can't, if it's a surgeon or something like that, that's going to be pretty devastating for his business.
Yeah, I got news for you. If a radio guy falls off the roof, it's going to be bad for him, too.
That's true. It's wrong choice of falling off. No.
So tell me, give me a little bit. I don't want to go through your books, but how many clients do you have, or what's a typical Christmas season like? I mean, are you busy?
Typical for us now, since we've done it since 9, that we're kind of a veteran, we'll say. But we'll start lighting the beginning of October, and we're booked probably another 2 weeks. I have two sales consultants that are full for next week with appointments also. So.
And these are consultants just to come up with a design, kind of?
Correct.
And you take them down, obviously. Do you recycle them, or is this a situation where you cut and toss?
Well, we did a big survey back probably 5 or 6 years ago, and people looked at us as a franchise that we want a one call and take care of it all. Uh-huh. And so we've gone to where it's kind of like a lawn maintenance company. You don't buy the mower for the lawn maintenance company to cut your grass. So you don't buy the decorations from us. That way you can choose, pick and choose each year what you want done, what you don't want done, change colors. So we've kind of made that very easy for our clients to decide.
I was kind of surprised, too, that this is a franchise operation. I kind of thought it was, you know, guys, businesses doing it on their own. Why did you go the franchise route?
Well, back in 99, I was kind of the same. I saw it at the Mid-Am show. It used to be at Navy Pier. You probably remember that.
Sure.
Now I think it's out in Schaumburg. And I saw this, and it was, you know, I was like, I was in the midst of January, and, you know, my guys didn't have anything to do. And I'm looking at that, and first thing I thought is, who would pay me to put Christmas lights up?
Right.
You know what I mean? So I didn't think it would amount to anything, but I like, I'll try it. We tried it, and it's a big part of our business now. Obviously, it keeps our guys going, you know.
Yeah, good for the guys, too.
When it's downtime. Probably the best thing about our service is the takedown. Like today, it's pretty nice. You could probably go out and you wouldn't mind being outside putting your lights up. But in January to take them down.
Never want to do it.
That's when it gets a little brutal out there.
What's the goofiest thing you've put on a house?
Goofiest thing? Man, that's a good question. We kind of stay away from what we'd call the goofy things. I guess the goofiest call I had is I walked into a guy's house and he says, hey, did you see next door? I'm like, well, yeah, I saw the house next door. I got to be better than that guy.
Nice. Well, that's what Christmas is all about, Gary.
Right, exactly. Outdoing your neighbor. That's the Christmas spirit, right?
Gary Fouts, Christmas Decor. How do people find out more from you?
You can go on our website, christmasdecor.net. And there is a franchise locator there. So there's four others in the Chicago area. So you can decide who's closer to you.
Great. I appreciate it. I know it's busy time for you. So thanks for taking time. Have a Merry Christmas.
You too, Steve. Thank you.
All right. A lot of people save up all year for Christmas, but maybe they should be saving up all their adulthood for retirement. Bill Geiger is in the studio. Our regular visits with Bill come just about every other Thursday or so, and they are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Mr. Geiger, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good to see you, sir. Are you talking to my father? It certainly isn't me.
Mr. Geiger, yeah, you're honorable. You had a very pleasant Thanksgiving, I hope.
Very nice.
All right,
nice.
So, so Terry Savage was in yesterday, and she talks every year about gifts for kids, and a lot of them are early, gifts to establish saving sort of priorities things like that. So let's take a kid who gets that piggy bank that teaches them how to save for retirement and go forward to when you're 55 or 60 years old. That's the time when you start to get ready for using that savings, right, or allocating that savings.
You're in your late 50s to early 60s. It is the absolutely ideal time to start adjusting your portfolio for retirement. That piggy bank that they had for all those years, somehow that piggy bank has got to create income for their retirement. The really, really big deal, Steve, in retirement, and this is why we save our entire lives, is so that we can have security. So we can sleep at night and enjoy our lifestyle and not worry whether the market's up 350 points or down 350 points. And what that equates to is just having as much dependable, sustainable income as you can possibly put together. The happiest people you ever see in your life are people with big pensions.
Well, I was just going to say that because you tell me that over and over.
Yeah.
And it's so true. The happiest retirees are the ones with pensions because they know
how they're going to pay their bills
and what's coming in every month.
Yeah. And with knowing what's coming in every month, they can sleep at night. They can enjoy trips. They can relax a little bit.
And that's what you do, right? You go take people with their retirement and prepare sort of the same kind of thing.
Our wheelhouse, our focus is folks in their late 50s, early 60s, to help them transition into getting ready for retirement. And this couldn't be a better time to be talking about this.
Right.
Steve, you think about it. The market's hitting all new highs every day almost. We're over 24,000. Market's up 350 today as I'm watching it. And what a better time to take part of that portfolio and create income with it. We had a 60-year-old couple. We took $800,000 of their portfolio. And in 7 years, they'll have over $65,000 of income. That's not too shabby. You add that in their Social Security, they've got a six-figure income for the rest of their lives.
Do that again. So they invested what?
$800,000 in
today
in an income strategy today. In 7 years, when they retire at the age of 67, they'll have over $65,000 for the rest of their life. They add in their Social Securities. How would you like to face retirement with a six-figure guaranteed income for the rest of your life? You can enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I think
you can
feel
secure.
That would make it sort of a Merry Christmas.
Yes, it would.
So what is it the most important thing that people need to do if they haven't done much yet?
They need, there's two things. You need to get a handle on risk. Right now, the market's going straight up. Risk is just a concept. When it starts going straight down, it's a four-letter word.
I think it's 22 months now. Is the record 22 months of gains?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But the second thing, and this is what we're just talking about, you got to start figuring out and planning for how you're going to pay your bills, where that income's going to come from. And that is probably the most critical thing you can be doing 5 to 10 years from retirement.
And here we are at the holiday time and talking about giving gifts to kids. But I would imagine this would be a nice time to give a gift to yourself as well and just sort of figure this out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
and again, what a better time to do it.
We had a guy in yesterday from, I'm sorry, I can't think of the name of that. He was a PhD and he looked at brain surgery and he talked about people who, what their brain did when they were worried about finances. And as you can imagine, it just fried, you know. But here's the thing, Bill. So then they looked at it when you had a financial advisor, and it really had a dramatic impact in calming them. And the idea is that you've got someone else looking with you to try to figure out how to sort things out.
You don't feel like you're doing it alone.
Yeah, I'm not an expert, but I know I could use one.
Yeah, you know, everybody's not an expert in everything. And when you're sitting down with someone that can help you, that is a great feeling.
Well, Bill, it was good to see you again. I appreciate you coming by.
Good to see you,
we'll
sir.
We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Absolutely.
Don't you usually take a little time off in December? Are you going to?
We're working on that.
All right. Well, Bill Geiger. Now, Kim, you're a Louisville product, right?
I sure am. Yeah, yes, I am.
We're going to go down to, the guys are going to be here, but Rabbit Hole Distillery, Rabbit Hole Whiskey, Bourbon, they're going to be in studio a little bit later this half hour. I think there's a Chicago link to their beginning, so that's coming up, but I'm sure you know all about bourbon.
Oh, yes, I do.
Ian, good. Mm-hmm. Well, you have to listen. Ian sure is on a phone line. He's a senior editor at CNET and joins us from time to time to talk about the latest in the world of tech and what CNET has been covering. Ian, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey, I got to thank you. You turned me on to the latest Firefox browser, told me to try it. I'm loving it. You're right. It's much faster.
Yeah, I mean, look, they really tried to pull out the stops. And after they helped kick off the really big browser trend of the last 10 years and made stuff like Safari and Chrome and all of that popular, they fell behind. And it's really good to see a company come up and try and be innovative again, and especially them who have ties back to the beginning of the internet. It's really good to see.
And they're all about independence, net neutrality, and all of that, right?
Well, yeah, they do definitely have politics that's much more in line with internet freedom and, you know, what you would consider the left side of the internet. But, you know, the big thing also is that they are very heavy on privacy. So unlike people like Chrome, for example, that has come under a lot of criticism for the way they handle ads and tracking, Firefox goes very extreme to the privacy level. So if you're worried about something like that, there are good people to look at.
So I brought up net neutrality because that's been back in the news, and the FCC, it's Ajit Pai, right, the FCC chairman, rolling back some of that neutrality. I want to talk about what he had to say about Twitter in a story that Liza Malloy wrote for you guys. But before that, give us 30 seconds on what the FCC has done when it comes to net neutrality and why we should care about it.
Right. So the why you should care about it probably should be first. So the basic idea of net neutrality is the very inside industry conversation, but it matters to a lot of us. The argument that the tech companies make is that if we don't ensure that people like Verizon, Comcast, AT&T, whoever is delivering internet service, is forced to treat all internet traffic equally, then what might happen is they may start picking and choosing winners just based upon how much money they have. So, for example, Netflix became a huge giant because at one point it was a small service that tried something and they were able to get and. You and I, who pay for internet service anyway, were able to go and use it. In this new world that the tech industry is worried about, Netflix, the next Netflix would not be able to start without paying a bunch of money to AT&T, Verizon, Comcast, and whoever else just to get access to us. And that's the concern they have.
Bring it even closer down to Main Street. So I have a little travel company, SteveBertrandTravel.com, okay? I like for people to go to that website, see what's available and things like that. If we get rid of net neutrality, then would I be sort of stifled when compared to Apple Vacations or Priceline.com or things like that?
Or Expedia, yeah. There's a danger of that. The problem is that this hasn't happened at scale yet. There are small instances, like in South America, for example. There are a couple of internet service providers who have said, you have to pay extra to get access to Facebook, or you have to pay extra to get access to YouTube. And that is horrifying. I think if that happened in the United States, there'd be a rebellion. And so I think that that is what people are worried about could happen. It hasn't happened yet, but there's already rumors out there that Comcast is planning to do something along those lines, not charging us, but charging those companies.
All right.
And of course, if they charge those companies, it gets filtered to us anyway, so it's not fun.
And then we get back to Ajit Pai, the FCC chairman, who said this week that we shouldn't be worried about the FCC or Comcast or AT&T or those. We should be worried about people like Twitter. They're the ones who are really stifling speech on the internet. What did he mean by that?
Right. Well, I think, you know, I think the broad belief of this thing, he gave this speech in which he slammed Twitter, is that he was trying to deflect, right? He's talking about a lot of the criticism that is very legitimate about how Twitter handles speech on its platform, how, you know, how far they're willing to go to allow people to say whatever they want or what their rules are and applying them fairly and equally. And, you know, there's a lot of criticism out there about it, and he's pointing to that. The problem is that that has very little to do with net neutrality, right? We're talking about one thing, which is about internet access, and another thing about how a company, one company in Silicon Valley, is handling speech.
All right, so there's that. You guys had a piece, too, about, I think it was like 7 tips for Cyber Monday. Cyber Monday's in the rearview mirror, but I was looking at it, and there's this one thing I had no idea. So, you know, sometimes you see something that's on sale. It's like, all right, well, maybe it's not really on sale, or maybe they marked it up to mark it down. And one of the cyber tips you guys had was to check out the price history of an item. I didn't know you could do that. That is
it's
so cool.
Amazing. It is the best part. It's one of my favorite features of the internet. So what you can do is that it's this website called Camel, Camel, Camel. So it's the word camel three times.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why. Don't ask. And so what they do is that if you go to that website and type in the Amazon link or just copy paste it in, it'll tell you the price history over all time of what that product was and tell you not only from what Amazon was charging, but third parties and all of that. So you can figure out if it's actually a good deal. And that's important because over Black Friday and that weekend and Cyber Monday, one of our competitors, the Wirecutter, who does reviews for the New York Times, they did research on all the deals that they saw, and they said less than 1% of the deals they saw over that weekend were worth it.
No kidding. All right, so it's say, I like it when you say it. Go ahead, say it again.
Yeah, it's called Camel, 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 three times.com.
Camel, Camel, Camel.com, and type in the URL, the link to the item on Amazon, and you can see how what they used to charge for it. Very cool. I love that advice.
And we have a very easy link on CNET if you want to do it the easy way. We've got just go to our 7 Cyber Monday tips, and you'll find the link right there.
So that's CNET.com. You could do it that way, right?
Yep.
Okay, or what's the website?
Yeah, Camel, Camel, Camel.com.
Ian, sure. Thanks very much. We'll talk again soon if you come back.
Yeah, absolutely, I will.
We're going to talk a little bourbon whiskey, I think. Kaveh Zamanian is in the studio. He's the founder of Rabbit Hole Distilling, and Michael Motamedi as well, the director of marketing at Rabbit Hole. Gentlemen, welcome to both of you. Michael, are you going to talk too, or just Kaveh?
I can come in whenever you want.
you just lean back there a little bit. I thought I was going to take the time off. Welcome, guys. How are you?
Not too bad.
Yeah. All right, Kaveh. Yeah. So, Kaveh, you're the guy behind this, right? You created Rabbit Hole Distilling?
I am, yes.
It started in Chicago, did I read that somewhere?
Well, you know, the roots of it in some ways, yeah. I met my wife, who was from Louisville, here in Chicago about 15 years ago. We married, had 3 kids here in the city, and then after our 3rd kid, it was either the suburbs or Louisville, and we decided to go right. to Louisville.
Did you look at any suburbs or just went straight to Louisville?
You know, I did, but I actually, my clinical practice, I'm a clinical psychologist by training, it was right across the street.
Oh, no kidding.
Just on Wabash.
So you go down to Louisville with the idea of starting a distillery, or how did that happen?
No, I went to Louisville. You know, we went for family reasons, but when I got there, I kind of got a feel for what's happening in the bourbon industry, and I had the bug from the old days and thinking about doing something different, and that's basically it.
So, you know, it's hard to buy a beer now because there are so many choices.
Sure.
Which is great. It's great, but it's hard. And I know that I think there's been something sort of similar in the distillery business, but I don't know if it's been as great, right? I mean, are we seeing a lot more independent distilleries?
We're beginning to, yeah. Certainly around the country, there's a lot of independents opening up. And I think that's the beginning of being able to have kind of a broader offering, if you will.
Right.
But I don't think that we're completely there yet because a lot of these supposed independents actually are sourcing bourbon from places like Indiana, slapping a label on it and calling it their own. So, you know, that is something that's going to – you're probably going to see the genuine juice coming out of these distilleries in a few years.
You know, it's fascinating you say that because I lead trips to Europe with groups, a lot of times WGN groups. And we went to Scotland a few years ago.
Right.
Where I learned a little bit about the bourbon industry in Kentucky. But so we're in Scotland and we built it as a distillery trip. Mm-hmm. And so we toured one distillery. It was nice. We toured the second distillery. It was the exact same tour. Yeah. And then we learned the third was going to be, it's the same company now, yeah. right? These big companies are buying up all these little distilleries and they're becoming big business.
Well, that's actually one of the reasons I got in the business in the first place. My wife and I used to go out and one of our kind of pastimes was looking at the back bar and trying to see how many of these bourbons actually were from the same distillery or the same recipe.
Right.
And surprisingly, you know, majority of the bourbons out there really come from four or five distilleries right now.
What I learned, though, in Scotland about Kentucky was that to be genuine bourbon, is it by regulation that a barrel can only be used once?
That's right. It has to be a brand new American, charred American oak barrel, and you can't use it a second time.
And
you can't even adulterate it with any other type of barrel and still call it bourbon. That's another thing that most people don't know about.
What do you do with your old barrels?
Well, a couple of things. We use it sometimes for finishing projects, like our rye barrel we use to finish London Dry Gin that we purchase. And then sometimes we share it with some of our beer partners, breweries that use it for their yeah. finishing projects. Or we sell it actually to our cooperage that sells it back to Ireland and Scotland.
Well, that's how I learned about it, because yeah. the Scotch whiskey would be distilled and rested, I guess, I don't know if that's the term, mm-hmm. in Kentucky bourbon barrels,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is a pretty amazing thing to me.
Yeah, it is.
All right, so that's that. Tell me, I'm interested in, and I don't know if you guys know the history of it, but how is it that a bottle became a Christmas gift? You know, we're going to a party, we're going to bring a bottle. You know, it's just sort of one of those things, and I would imagine this sure. is a busy time for you guys.
It is. Michael, you want to chime in on that?
Well, I think it's because, you know, you got to go spend time with your family. It's like, let's get drunk while right. we do this, right? Because this is going to be a long couple hours.
But it is true, isn't it? I mean, that's kind of is the gift. And so how is it that you guys make it that it's a rabbit hole bottle that people are giving? How do you get to people?
Well, I honestly, when I came onto this project about 2.5 years ago, he's been at this for about 5 years now, going on 5 years. Going and giving gifts to people, I was predominantly always giving scotch. Mm-hmm. Because even as an American, I felt as though bourbon maybe was like kind of a bottom shelf gift to give, just because of this notion that I have in my mind from my sure. college years, you know? And so
We have to talk about your choice of bourbon, I think, but that's later.
Exactly. But the bottle that we have right now, I mean, we have a gift right over here for you as well. It's extremely elegant. And
that's beautiful,
unlike
yeah.
any other bourbon bottle on the market. So I think that's the first step, really, so someone can catch an eye. We also have won double gold and best straight bourbon in the country in the New York Spirits Competition with the bourbon that you have in your hand right now.
You guys are sort of emphasizing Chicago, right? I mean, mm-hmm. why is it because of your history, Cave, or why is it Chicago?
Yeah, that's part of it. I think we launched in Kentucky first, and for me, Chicago is really home. I lived here for over 18 years, and I consider it home. And also, aside from that, you know, it's one of the largest spirit markets in the country, and there's no place really, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to food and spirits.
What's the Kentucky atmosphere, the Louisville atmosphere, for a guy coming down from Chicago and breaking in?
You know, it's funny you say that. It's I was a little anxious about it at first, but surprisingly, people in the industry in particular have been extremely open and hospitable. You know, I had the good fortune of being able to hang out with people like Jim Rutledge from Four Roses, Dave Shurick from Woodford Reserve, Larry Ebersole, who was the master distiller at Pernod. All these guys would come to my house, believe it or not, sit around the dinner table, taste bourbons, and teach me the tools of the trade. And so it's been incredibly receptive.
All right, so, Michael, again, this is the holiday time. Do you see a spike in business now? I mean, is this
huge, huge?
Yeah.
I mean, in the liquor industry, you're doing about 30 to 40% of your business in O&D, October, November, December. And we count on that. But it's also an exciting time for us, especially as a new bourbon brand emerging into this market. You know, there are upward battles, but we've seen a huge, huge reception to what we're doing. I think a lot of it has to do with our authenticity and our transparency and what we do. In Kentucky alone, we've sold 3,600 cases in our first 12 months. We're hitting about 1,500 to 2,000 cases in Chicago alone.
Wow.
This is our first 12 months selling, winning double gold and best straight bourbon. These are all factors into why people are really trying to, you know, be a part of this rabbit hole journey.
Michael Modamedi and Kaveh Zamani in the Rabbit Hole Distilling. How do people find more information?
You can go to rabbitholedistilling.com. Or you can go on our Instagram. It's just at Rabbit Hole.
Excellent, guys. Hey, great to meet you. I wish you great success. I know you got a distillery you're going to build, right? A new one coming up?
Yeah. We're actually wrapping it up in March, a grand opening Derby weekend.
Excellent. All right. Have to come back when you do.
We'll do.